Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Okay, this one is all about games, weirdly. This is a gaming podcast now for the final episode, or maybe the penultimate episode, depends on how many games I get through. It is all about games. Now, I will say, not all of the games in the Y directory are actually, like, games. And you'll see that right up front. The first one, str file, is not a game. It services a game, but it's not a game. And some of the others, like the next one, Fortune, that's not a game. But anyway, these are, like, fun things that you can do, you know, in a terminal. So this is the BSD-games package. A lot of these are very old games. They are designed to run in a terminal with ASCII art or just text prompts. So these are, it's a unique bunch of games, and I am a unique gamer. I do play a lot of games in real life, but as with anyone, I have my own opinions about what is fun. So I'm just going to kind of go through these and really talk about how they play, what the point is, and whether I personally like it, which isn't necessarily whether you would personally like it. So if you're looking for a diversion in a terminal, then BSD-games is not a bad thing to check out. There are some real surprises in here, but let's go through them. So user bin str file. So this is in user bin. It's not in user games. That's not super important, but it is, like, it's worth noting. This isn't even called a game, like, by its own path. So, str file reads a file of lines separated by a line containing a percent sign. So you have some text, and then return, and then percent, return. Some more text, return, percent, return. Okay, so that's how we've delimited this file. And str file reads that file in and creates a data file with a header structure and a table of file offsets for each group, for each line. And this allows random access of strings. So again, not a game. It's really just kind of a way to index a text file. There is apparently a companion command called unstr, U-N-S-T-R, and I couldn't find that on the system. I don't think that's installed, but apparently it sort of does the reverse of this. I believe that this is being used by Fortune, which I may as well talk about right now. Fortune, it returns a quote chosen at random from a Fortune data file stored in user share games Fortune. And by default, on the system right now, there are quote files from Star Trek, and then probably some, I'm imagining they're just historical files called Fortunes and Fortunes 2. There's a Limerick one, Linux cookie, don't know what that is off the top of my head, Zippy. But you can download a bunch more from slackbuilds.org. Just do a search for Fortune. I use SBO Find lately, and you'll get a bunch of results. Quote files for Doctor Who, Firefly, Game of Thrones, Dune, Farscape, and a bunch more. There are two shell scripts in /etc/profile.d called bsd-games-login-fortune. Either sh or csh, and you can use that code to print a fortune anytime you open a new terminal if you want. I do that on my computers. I just like seeing quotes from stuff I like. They're not always great quotes, but I mean, they don't really have to be, you know. This isn't like inspirational calendars. This is just like, hey, I remember the time Captain Kirk said that or whatever. So you can source that code in your .bashrc file. Do literally the word source space /etc/profile.d/bsd-games-login-fortune.sh. And then when you open a new terminal or a new tab, you get a little quote before you get your prompt. It's fun. It's nice. Okay, adventure. This is a text adventure. This is a very famous one. I believe its other name might be Colossal Cave or something like that. Or maybe that's different from this. I don't know. I think this is Colossal Cave. Either way, you start it up with just adventure. You type in adventure, and you're offered some instructions that amount to pretty much type in words, and then it dumps you into the adventure. You are standing at the end of a road before a small brick building. Around you is a forest. A small stream flows out of the building and down a gully. This is how I should start all of my D&D games, just as an Easter egg for whatever geeks are out there. So you're meant to explore, but like with text adventures, I don't know, it seems like half the exploration is getting to grips with just how unintelligent your dungeon master is. I get frustrated with these games, to be honest. This is not a great one to sort of have early in the list, but it does start with A after all. I've never gotten very far in any text adventure like this. I think maybe I haven't learned like the mechanics, which is kind of surprising because like they're kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, right? Or you know, an RPG, a tabletop RPG of any kind. But maybe I'm trying to think of them too much like that. You know, maybe I keep thinking, well, you're telling me to perform an action. Here's what I want to do, and then inevitably they're like, you cannot do that. I mean, like literally, I'll type in look, LOOK, seems intuitive to me, and it tells me, sorry, but I am not allowed to give you more detail. What does that mean? Allowed to give me more detail? You mean you don't have more detail to give? Like, I hate that. Anyway, despite how down I am on this game, I am an avid gamer, I promise. I know it doesn't seem like it from what I said about all the X games and this adventure game. I do like gaming. I know a lot of people have fond memories of this game or of Zork, or, you know, any number of similar text adventures. I played a Lord of the Rings one a long time ago and absolutely got stuck at essentially Flight to the Ford, where you're standing off against the ring wraiths across the river. Just could not get past that part no matter what I typed. So anyway, didn't fare much better on adventure. I didn't get very far. I get very annoyed very quickly with these games. And yeah, I'm not a fan. Sorry. I mean, I admire the effort. I admire the concept. I am not a fan. There are other games similar enough to this that we will learn about later that I think implement the process a lot better. So all is not lost. It's just adventure specifically is not for me. Arithmetic. You can practice your arithmetic. It's like a quiz. And frankly, it's really, really useful. When I was in school long, long ago, we had to learn multiplication tables, but bizarrely never addition or subtraction tables. And I don't know why not. And at this point in my life, like way too late in life, really, I'm realizing that I don't just know what, like, I don't know, 8 + 6 is. I mean, at the moment I do because I've played arithmetic and now I remember it. It's 14. But before memorizing that, thanks to arithmetic, I'd have to have thought about like, okay, 6 and 8, that's basically like 6 + 6, which is a 12, and 8 - 6 is a 2, so that's like 14. So that works. It worked for me well enough, but there is that sort of mental cycle that you have to expend. It's just better to just memorize some of this stuff. And I don't know why I never thought of that before. And arithmetic, I mean, I'd already been practicing addition tables anyway, but arithmetic, it just, I mean, it's right there. Just do it. Just remember, like memorize simple addition, simple subtraction. It's really, really useful. Next up, ATC. This is a fun one. This is really cool. ATC stands for Air Traffic Control. And in this game, you control planes according to like this ASCII radar screen. And you issue commands to the planes through an admittedly cryptic sequence of key presses. Like it takes some getting used to. And of course, you're struggling to decipher what the heck all those symbols on your little ASCII radar are actually meant to represent. It is not impossible to learn. It does take practice. You do have to kind of sit with it and just make a lot of mistakes. Yeah, it's a learning process. But basically, single letters plus an altitude, like an integer, represent planes, or a plane, I should say. A single letter with a number, that's a plane. The single digit, if it's a single digit after the letter, then that's thousands of feet. And then once it starts going up from there, you know that you've dropped down to like hundreds and things like that. Prop planes are uppercase. Jets are lowercase, but they'll always have a letter and number. So a prop plane, uppercase. jets lowercase. That was really hard to remember too. I think of jets being much bigger than a prop plane. I don't know if that's true. That's just what I think. Anyway, number and angle bracket. That's an airport. The angle bracket, or a caret for north, a V for south, that indicates the direction a plane must be moving to get into the airport. So don't try to land a plane, you know, going against traffic. Not a good idea. Circles or asterisks and a digit, that's a beacon. You use these as reference points when you're directing your planes. So you can tell a plane to, like, turn left at beacon 1, or in the game terminology, ALAB1, assuming the plane is called A. Incoming planes always enter at 7,000 feet, and for a plane to, like, enter or exit the radar screen, it must be flying at 9,000 feet, and that can go in any direction. So you're trying to keep planes from colliding in midair. You don't want to tell them to land somewhere that they cannot land. They will crash. You don't want them to run out of fuel. And eventually, like, the goal is to try to get airplanes to land in airports safely. And it is not easy, but it is kind of addicting. It is. You can sit in front of this and you'll think, oh, I'm no good at this. And then you'll close it. And then you'll say to yourself, you know what? I think I got the hang of it. I could probably go back in and try it again. So then you open it back up and you crash another plane and you're no good at this. And you're like, I think I'm getting the hang of it though. You know, it's good. I like this one. ATC, air traffic control. Try that one. Next up is backgammon and teachgammon. That's out of order, obviously, but I'll just talk about them together. Backgammon with an ASCII board. Obviously, they're all ASCII. Everything's ASCII here. But I mean, some show you the board and some just describe things to you. So this is one that, like, has a picture in text on your screen, and it is backgammon. It does have a really good tutorial, teachgammon, that's what it's called, and you type your moves out according to, like, the columns and depending on your dice roll, and you're just told what your dice roll is. So I don't know much about backgammon. I did go through the tutorial, and you can get to the tutorial two different ways. You can either just launch backgammon and it'll offer you the training session, or you can just launch teachgammon directly. Either way, it's the same tutorial. And I did go through it. I get it, I guess. I don't know. I'm just not that into backgammon. I'm more interested in chess than backgammon. If I had to pick, like, a ponderous sort of strategic board game, I think, yeah, I just default to chess. I'm not saying backgammon isn't good. I'm not saying it's not complex. I'm just saying I'm just not that into it. But this is a perfectly serviceable adaptation of it, I think. I mean, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what it's up against, really. I have played, I think, backgammon in real life once or twice. But yeah, not super into it. Okay, next up is banner. This is an easy way, it's not a game, it's an easy way to create ASCII art of text, so, and vertically. So, okay, you're making a banner, right? So if you imagine you have a printer with just an endless stream of paper, like a sheet that just never ends, then you could imagine printing a big message across the paper, but from your terminal's perspective, it would have to be turned on its side so that it could just keep printing out of the printer. So that's what this does. It defaults to being very large. You can control that with the -W for width. I recommend maybe trying, I don't know, 40 or 50 or something to start with, because otherwise it's just, you don't really even see anything. But you can see a thing by doing, like, banner -W 40 equals hello, or not equals, quote, hello, close quote. And you'll see the word hello, sort of printed vertically, made out of letters. You know, like, it's not printing the letters, it's printing ASCII art of the letters, because it wants it to be really, really big for, like, a dot matrix printer or something. It does not work with non-ASCII characters. So for example, if you do banner -W40, and then what is it on my keyboard? It is the right alt key for compose, colon, parentheses for a little happy face, a little smiley face. That'll fail. If you try to print, like, Unicode characters, it doesn't know what to do with those. It just opts out. It fails. Next up is Battlestar. So this is the other text adventure game, or another text adventure game. And this one, I found much, much more fun than adventure. I found it much easier to control. You can type things like look to look around, back to go backwards. You can take items in the world, look them over. Basically, all the commands I found really, really intuitive. They all work the way that I expected them to work. I really found this to be fun. And I don't know if it's just maybe the setting is more intriguing to me for whatever reason. I don't know. But I found this, I don't think it's the setting, actually, because I love a fantasy setting as much as I love a star, what are they called, science fiction setting. I found this a lot easier to work with. You can save your game progress here, which I did, so I'll go back to this one, actually, because it's got me. I'm definitely intrigued. I want to see where this is going. That's Battlestar. Okay, next, again, out of order, we're going to do BCD, Morse, and PPT. They're distinct commands, but for whatever, they all share a man page, so we might as well just cover them together. They each convert a string to either a punch card, that's BCD, paper tape, that's PPT, or Morse code, that's the Morse command. The only one I could really verify, I guess, is Morse. I mean, I don't know what a punch card is supposed to look like. I don't know what a paper tape is. So whether these are accurate or they're just like visual gimmicks, I don't know. I'm assuming they're accurate. I don't know what use they are. You do get really interesting output, though. The punch card one just really intrigues me. I haven't studied it, I guess, enough to really make sense of it, but it is quite interesting. And anyway, for the Morse code one, you can use the dash S option to get actual dots and dashes instead of the default vocables dit 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 da. That's what it just prints out, dit 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 da, or dit dit dit, or you know, dit da, or you know, whatever you're printing. But yeah, that's the dash S for just dots and dashes. Otherwise you get words representing dit, a dot, and a daw, a long sound. Really weird. But yeah, that's Morse, BCD, and PPT. It's really just literally like Morse dash S quote, hello world, close quote. And you'll see that in Morse code. Okay, next up is Caesar. And again, a little bit out of order here, Rot 13. This is a Caesar cipher, or a rotation cipher. As you may or may not know, a Caesar cipher is a really, really rudimentary, like baby's first code kind of encryption technique, I guess, in which you it's not encryption, it's really just, it's encoding, in which you take each letter of a word and shift it by some number of letters. And so, for instance, a Caesar cipher of 1 would convert H to I, because A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. So you just move it over 1. H? Nah, let's write it as an I. E? No, let's write it as an F. L? Nope, we'll write that as an M. L? No, as an M. O? We'll go over to P. So the word hello in the Caesar cipher of 1 would be I-F-M-M-P. You can test that with the Caesar command. Echo hello, pipe Caesar 1 returns I-F-M-M-P. You don't have to use 1. That was just my basic example. So we could do echo hello pipe Caesar 8 PMTTW. Another term for this is, as I said, rotation cipher, or ROT for short. And ROT 13 is, for whatever reason, pretty common. There's probably a reason for it. I don't know what that reason is, but ROT 13 is pretty common. So you could, if you wanted to do ROT 13, you can just do like echo hello pipe ROT 13. That's basically like saying Caesar 13, and you get returned URYYB. All right, next up, Canfield. Canfield. It's a solitaire game rendered in ASCII art, and I don't play solitaire, really. I should learn it, but I just don't. So CF scores, again, out of order a little bit here. No, it's not out of order. That is right next in the list. So CF scores is the high score list of any of your Canfield games, which I didn't play any. So, I mean, I pressed some buttons. I saw that it was a solitaire card game. And yeah, that's neat. Count Mail. The Count Mail program counts your mail and tells you about it rather obnoxiously. That's the man page entry for it. This literally, it just looks at your mail spool. So if you check, if you're not using your mail spool, you'll always get the same response, presumably, which is you don't have any mail. Or it's actually a lot more obnoxious than that. Like, what does it do? Count mail. 0 mail messages. Ha 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 ha. That's what it says. And of course, there's a little error here, line 51, from command not found. So I don't know what's going on in the background there, but count mail doesn't even work as expected. It's a silly application. I've already talked about it too long. Cribbage. This is a I just, there we go. Cribbage. This is a game of cribbage rendered in ASCII art. I tried to learn cribbage. I did. But I did admittedly lose interest after reading, I don't know, 24 poorly written instructions. I just don't know. Some games just, people never wrote them down, I guess. Or, I mean, they did write them down, but not with, in plain English. It just irritates me. I couldn't stand it. I do intend to revisit it. I mean, cribbage is a kind of a time-honored game. It just seems like something one should know. But if I do, maybe I'll revisit this because it seemed, you know, familiar. It's got the little tracker of your points or whatever. It seems like a good implementation of the game. I just did not have the interest to go through with it. Next up is DAB, D-A-B. That stands for Dots and Boxes. This is a sort of a school game, a schoolyard game, or a classroom game, I guess, because you probably wouldn't. Well, maybe you'd play it on a schoolyard. I don't know. Anyway, it's a game. And I've seen, you know, like I was introduced to it by someone who said that they used to play it all the time in school. That's what I'm trying to get to. You draw sort of an array of dots in the form of like of an incomplete grid. And then the players take turns connecting dots with a line. The goal is to complete a box. And the trick obviously is that you're taking turns. So it's very likely that a box you start creating will be sort of stolen by your opponent because they'll end up having the last line that completes that box. And you do that across the whole little array until you've got a complete grid, and then you count up the points of how many people have completed a box. The control scheme here is based on Vim mostly. It's K for up, J for down, H for left, L for right. You can also use U, Y, B, and N to move around the grid, and then space creates the line. You're not playing the computer ever, as far as I can tell. It is couch co-op only, so you need another person to play, or else you're just playing against yourself, which doesn't really work in this case. Factor. This prints the prime factors of an integer. Test it out. Factor 21. 21 has 3 and 7 leading up to it. Factor 31. 31, unsurprisingly, has 31. That's it. So that's Factor. It's pretty cool. I like that one. Not a game, but it's fun. Okay, here's Go Fish. This is definitely a child's game. It's played in text in this case. So you're dealt a hand of letters and numbers, and then you ask your opponent, which when I was playing, it was a computer. I think you can only play the computer, whether it has a matching card. If it does, it has to give you that card, and then you set that pair of cards aside, and you score a point. If they don't, then you have to draw a new card. The goal of the game is to end up with no cards, and I guess the most points, or you know, the most pairs, completed pairs. It's a very interactive kind of game against the computer. So you kind of sit there and you type a letter and you hope for the best. I mean, there's no strategy here. You're just taking wild guesses in the dark. Gomoku. It's a game of five in a row, which I think as a kid we had a set of this, but we called it Pente, P-E-N-T-E. I think it seems to be the same thing. And it's fine. You know, you're trying to line up. If you've ever played like Connect Four from, I don't know, probably like Milton Bradley or Parker Brothers or whoever made Connect Four, then you've played this, except this one has five in a row. You connect five, not four. The really cool thing about this, though, if I'm honest, I mean, you can play at couch co-op, you can play against the computer, but the really cool thing is that you can make the computer play against the computer. And that is fascinating to watch because you just see all of these moves being made, and it's kind of like this almost generative art project gamified, though. And yeah, it's oddly satisfying. So if you don't want to play, just have the computer play. It's kind of fun to see it populate. It's kind of cool. Well, we're up to the H's now in the BSD games. So I think it's time for coffee, really. I mean, there's no connection between coffee and the letter H. I'm just saying we've gotten through several games. Let's go get coffee. We're back with coffee. This is a great cup of coffee. Could be the last GNU World Order cup of coffee for all I know. I don't know. See how we go in terms of time and packages. The next one, speaking of packages, is Hack, and couldn't play this one. It says it couldn't write to, it can't write to var lib BSD game slash hack slash record or record maybe. And I just didn't feel like adjusting the permissions to make that possible. Not for a BSD game. Like, it's just, yeah, I didn't think it was going to be worth it. The man page doesn't like tell you how to change the location of where it wants to write out data. Apparently this is like a dungeon crawl or something. I can kind of imagine maybe a version of NetHack. I don't know. But it just, you know, there's a bunch of other dungeon crawlers out there. So I'm not going to bother with Hack. Hangman. You guess letters to try to complete a word. You might have played this again as kind of a school game. For each letter you guess incorrectly, you draw part of a man on a gallows. And if the man gets completed before you have guessed the word, or rather before you've completed the word, then you lose. That's the game, and that's the setup. It just shows you little gallows, a little hangman's gallows, whatever, and then a blank, and you just start guessing letters and hope that you don't guess wrong enough times to complete the man. Hunt. This is a LAN party multiplayer arena game. I'm not kidding you. In ASCII art. It is one of the coolest games in the bunch. I really enjoyed this. You give yourself a code name and a team number, and then you appear in a procedurally generated maze on your local network. So if there's a hunt game already on your local network, then you join that one. And otherwise, you are now hosting a game on your network of hunt. You can set the port with -P and give it some number so that other people can go straight to your game if they want to. Moving is, as are seemingly all of these, based on the Vim keyboard controls. So again, J for down, K for up, H for left, L for right. That's moving, but this game also cares about which way you're facing, because you can't see behind you, and you can't shoot in a direction that you're not facing, so you need to know which way you're looking. And the way you do that is you use the same navigational keys, except the capital version, so Shift-J, Shift-K, and so on. The point of the game is to kill the other players. Like, this is kind of like, I don't know, GoldenEye or something. I mean, like, you it's just, you go through this maze, and when you see someone, you try to kill them. You have lots of weapons, including like a gun, a grenade, a satchel charge, a bomb, and slime. And then there are even levels of weapons. So you've got a bomb, a big bomb, an even bigger bomb, the biggest bomb, and it gets silly. You also have like a little sonar or auspex or tricorder, a scanner of whatever you call it. It's a scanner, which you can use to show the location of other players. But you also have a cloaking device, and so do the other players, which will hide you from other people's scanners. Now, the trick is every weapon or device you use it takes a certain number of charges. It needs to recharge before you can use it again. So basic tools like your gun or your little scanner or your cloaker, they recharge in one round. And one round is like 20 actions or something. But the powerful stuff, no surprise, takes much longer to recharge and to regenerate. So you might only be able to use, you know, some device like literally once in a game before you get fragged. The maze has doors and twists and turns and a few surprises here and there, but there are no monsters. So you absolutely, that like there are no players controlled or no player characters controlled by the computer. This is absolutely a multiplayer game. You can launch it and play it by yourself, but I mean, then it's just a maze with no exit, with no goal. So it's not very fun. I've only played it with one other person, and I've played it that way once. So I think it would be a lot of fun to play with more people and to, you know, to be able to play it more than just once. I think that could be really fun. I could imagine having a lot of fun with that over a local network with lots of people who are interested in a game of hunt. Also, I love that the when you look up for man, the man page for this, you're just typing in manhunt. That sounds pretty cool too. So yeah, this is really fun. I think I kind of wish I'd discovered it sooner when I had more people around who probably would have played that sort of thing. But I wonder if maybe possibly like a modern version of this could be fun. And by modern, I just mean like a version of this with like sort of a rudimentary AI. And it wouldn't have to be a complex thing. In fact, I think it would be bad to have an over complex AI. I think it could be fun to just have an AI that, you know, uses some simple rules like, if enemy is within view, then shoot. If not, then do one of these random actions, that kind of thing. But anyway, that's Hunt. It's a lot of fun. Mille, it's another really fun one. Oh, this one was just so good. I mean, so was Hunt, but this one is also really good. So this is a two-handed card game, I guess, is how it describes itself. I don't really know what that means. Is it like a two-deck card game? I don't know. The graphics, the ASCII art on this one, it was a bit cluttered, I'll have to admit. And yeah, there are some problems with this, but it's a racing game. So you're driving a car along a racetrack or something, and there are hazards and potential accidents, and you could run out of petrol, and maybe you're just not going fast enough, and you can, like, there are lots of problems that can happen. But the idea is that you're going to rack up, I think it's 1,000, because it's mille, 1,000 kilometers or miles or something in your car. And once you get to that point, then I guess you've won the race. But the cool thing is that the card, so you have these cards, and again, it's ASCII text, so you're just looking at entries in a list. You have these cards, and the ones that you can play depends on the action card that has been drawn during like the draw phase. So you can only get in your kilometers or your miles or whatever we're using when you're in the go phase. If you've drawn an accident card, then you have to counter that with a repair card and so on. You can't go over 50 in one turn, unless you've got a card like End of Limit or Right of Way to grant yourself the ability to speed up and so on. So it's like a card battle game, but you're sort of battling like the environment in a weird way, or like the circumstances of your race. I like it a lot. I don't know that this is the correct implementation of the game, though. The UI is really cluttered. It is very difficult to envision what phase of the game you're in at any one point. And maybe that's because I'm trying to impose phases on a game that doesn't really have phases. I don't know. The UI does tell you when you can't do something, but I just don't ever feel like it tells me, I don't know, it doesn't seem to update me on sort of like, okay, now this is the state of the game, you know? And there is a lot of just text to look at, and it takes like constant analysis to figure out what on your little board has changed from moment to moment. Anyway, it's apparently based on a game called Milborn, and I said that wrong, right? I don't know how to born. How would you say that? Milborn. I don't know. Milborn is what it's based on, and I'd never heard of it. Apparently, it's a classic. I don't know how I've never heard of it. I am definitely going to hunt down a physical copy of it because it is a lot of fun, and I'm only hoping that there is a solo mode for it. Because, I could probably play it with my partner. She would probably be okay with that, actually. But I like solo gaming as well. So and this game has now introduced me to the concept of this game as a solo experience. So I kind of want that to happen. But anyway, next one up, I don't want to happen. Monop. So this is User Games Monop, not User Bin Monop. You might not have Monop, User Bin Monop on your computer. I think it came with like a Mono toolkit or something like that, or whatever. Yeah, no, Mono is what it's called. But this is User Games Monop, Man 6 Monop, and this is a Monopoly clone, and I can't stand Monopoly. It is a boring game. It is a bad game. It is a poorly designed game. I played one round of this out of an obligation to at least try it. It seems serviceable. And actually, if I'm honest, in terms of like interaction, it's actually pretty intuitive. The word roll rolls the dice, and then the computer tells you what square you've landed on. And if you've run into some kind of penalty like income tax, then you're presented with your options and you can answer. Especially compared to Mille, which I had played, you know, kind of right before Monop. Like this kind of interaction, this kind of like communication really is what it is. Was really, really refreshing. It was just too bad it's in a game that I refuse to play. Monopoly is just not good. So yeah, you can, you know, if you've played Monopoly, then you've played this. And if you play this, then you'll have played Monopoly. I don't recommend it, but you can if you like it. Number translates an integer you type into the string version of that integer. So this is hard to talk about because I'm going to say the words, but if you launch number and then you type in the digit 1, then number returns O-N-E. It spells out the digit you have just entered. Well, that doesn't seem very exciting, but now type 24345, and then you get 24,345, all spelled out as words. I think writing this must have been a very interesting exercise for someone, because it does take, you know, like, there are rules there that you have to follow to translate that series of integers into the way that we say it. So that seems like someone had fun figuring that out. It would probably be a good thing to look at the source code of at some point, just to, like, how do you do that? Or maybe do it yourself as a challenge, but not something I'm probably going to use. It's not a game. It's not fun, but it's cool. Fantasia. Apparently, it's a role-playing game. It sounded kind of intriguing, but apparently it's not working. So I type in Fantasia, and it says, an unrecoverable error has occurred reading var lib BSD games Fantasia Carex. Permission denied. Run setup to determine the problem. I tried running setup on a Lark and it said command not found, which I kind of expected. I also tried Fantasia space setup. Maybe that was like an option or something, but no. So I don't know. I don't feel like adjusting system permissions just for like these little games. So I just skipped it. Pig is next. It translates a string you type into the parody language Pig Latin. So I think Pig Latin, it's weird, you take the first letter of the word and move it to the end, and then you append A, like the sound A. So Pig, you get a prompt here. Hello, I'll do hello world. Elohe orald way. That's Pig Latin for hello world. It's a silly program. Palm, that returns the phase of the moon. This is really cool. I think this would make a really great login message, you know? Like, have a fortune and then the phase of the moon? Why not? Not that I need to know the phase of the moon, but, I mean, it's kind of cool to know the phase of the moon. Primes, returns a prime number between a range. So if you do prime 10, 23, then you get 11, 13, 17, 19, 23. Now, if you give no end value, it just runs forever. And I imagine will quickly tax your CPU. You will see, you use that system monitor in XFCE to notice how hard your CPU is working now. At least that was my experience with primes. Eventually it does start to really make your CPU work. quiz, it tests your number of your knowledge, not number, about random facts with, you know, obviously some constraints. It's reading from fact files somewhere in user share. So if you type in just quiz with no arguments, then you do get a list of topics. And out of this list, the only one I'm qualified to even make an attempt at would be Star Trek. So I typed quiz Star Trek. Nickname of the chief engineer, Scotty, right? Type of voice on board, the onboard computer has, female, right? Slow engines used for emergencies, impulse, right? Where first officer comes from, Vulcan. Boy, these are not, this is not a quiz. Name of electronic protective device on ships, shields. Right, name of the good guys, Federation. Right, first officer's name, Spock. Right, number of crew, 400. I assumed, obviously, that this was just encompassing the original series. Main engines of ship. Main engines of ship, warp drive. Right, no, what? It says what. Okay, how about warp? Right, there we go. All right, so yeah, that's a quiz. It just asks you questions. I did take it before, and I tried one of them that I had no clue about. I think it was called, like, something historical or something. And I kept getting an answer wrong, and it just never, if you get it wrong, that's functionally the end of the game. You cannot progress. A little bit weird. I feel like there should be, like, I give up option. But I couldn't find one. Next up is rain. This animates rain droplets onto your terminal, kind of like, not like snow falling, but more like you're looking at a body of water and seeing the raindrops hit the water and cause ripples. It animates comically fast on a modern system. You can use the dash D option and some number up to 999 to slow it down. I did rain dash D 200 and that worked fine. I don't love this one. I didn't care for it. I think the ASCII used to try to achieve this effect, I mean, I see what it's going for. I just didn't buy it as rain droplets. Very, very sharp edges. I just didn't, I don't know. It didn't look like, I mean, I wouldn't expect ASCII art, I guess, to look beautiful, but this did not look at all like what it was advertising. Maybe they should have gone with like a dot to a lowercase o to a capital O. Maybe that maybe could have worked. I don't know. Didn't love this one. Random reads from standard in and copies it to standard out with the probability of 1 divided by some denominator, with the default denominator being 2. So that's half of what I provide to standard in is going to be sent to standard out. All right, let's try that out. Let's do cat myfile.txt pipe wc-l 46. Okay, there's 46 lines in here. So now I'm going to do cat myfile.txt pipe random pipe wc-l 23. All right, well, that checks out. You can adjust the denominator by adding a number to your random command. All right, let's do that then. Cat myfile.txt pipe random 4 pipe wc-l 12. Yeah, feels about right. Okay, cool. So that's random. I could see that being really useful, to be honest. I mean, it's not something that I need often, but I do feel like that's a thing that could be useful. Sometimes you just want a random thing, right? Like that's pretty cool. Robots. The man page is really good for this one. I highly recommend it, but even better yet, I guess, the control, like the layout of the game is really good. Like the controls are on screen at all times, so you never have to remember how to work the game. It's just right there, right next to the board. So the setup is that a bunch of evil robots are chasing you. They want to kill you, and you are weaponless. So you are trying to move around the board in such a way that you cause the robots to collide and explode, or trip over junk piles and explode. Movement, well, I say explode. I mean, destroy. They become destroyed if they collide with each other or run into a junk pile. Okay, so movement is, as surprise, surprise, based on the Vim keyboard shortcuts. So J for down, K for up. H for which with the H for left, L for right. You can also move diagonally with the YUBN, and you can do that. You can run around and try to get the robots, but for every step you take, the robots take a step. So it's kind of a losing battle. I mean, like you can only run so far until they find you. So the real power of the game is your ability to teleport. Teleporting, you press T to teleport, and then you appear at a random location on the board. Now, sometimes, to be fair, that could be right next to a robot, so that's not great. But usually it is not. So there is a risk involved, but usually it's safe to do that. Usually it's quite good to do that. You can also just stand around and do nothing, which is the right pointing angle bracket, the greater than symbol. For whatever reason, that is not listed on the main game screen. Like that's the one control that it doesn't tell you about. I mean, it tells you about it in the man page, but not like on screen. So you just kind of have to remember that one. You can also use an uppercase movement key, like uppercase J, uppercase K, you know, shift K, shift H, shift L, whatever, to run as far as possible in that direction. So if you try some of these sort of free movement things, or these non-standard movement things where you're not just walking around waiting for robots to approach you, then that introduces a completely new strategy. You're not just running around one for one step. You're suddenly like leading the robots into one corner and then teleporting somewhere else, ideally far away. And then hopefully you can move around in such a way that they all turn and run into each other and kill, you know, half of their numbers, that kind of thing. It gets really fun. And you start sort of strategizing in ways that you're kind of being forced to think outside the box, I guess, because it's kind of an impossible task. Like just trying to get two robots to collide is surprisingly difficult, especially the fewer robots there are. Then it gets harder and harder, but they do always come towards you. They're like sharks. They smell your blood. They're coming toward you. So you have to, you know, you can lure them to wherever you need to lure them, and you just have to use dirty tricks to make that happen. I will say that one thing I don't love about the implementation of this game is that you don't really get to see the path the robots are taking when you do pull a really spectacular trick. Like if you teleport or if you wait around, the game basically just fast forwards in time and kind of shows you where the robots have ended up. And very frequently it's just the robots that are left over, you know, because a lot of them have died. So I don't know. I don't love that. I wish it would kind of just take its time, slow down, show me actually what's happening. Like when I teleport or when I wait around and do nothing or when I run, like don't just show me the end result. Show me like how we all got there. Or maybe it is and I'm just blinking and missing it. A lot of these applications I'm kind of realizing really didn't expect such responsive terminal displays. Okay, Sail, S-A-I-L. It seems like a naval war game. It seems complex. Frankly, it doesn't work. It's permission denied. There's a sync file issue, whatever that means. I don't know. So I didn't get to try Sail. Didn't bother trying to fix it. Snake and SNS Core, or actually SN Score is what that would be. Anyway, I got fooled. Don't you be fooled. This is not Snake. This is not like that Snake, you know, the one that you played on your first Nokia cell phone. Like this is not the Snake thing where you're a snake and you're growing in length and you have to run around and not eat your own tail. This is a completely different Snake. So in this one, you are a person running around like an arena in search of money. And every time you earn money, you increase your appeal as a tasty treat for a giant snake that is also in the arena. Initially, the snake kind of ignores you. You can just run around doing nothing. It won't approach you. Once you start picking up dollar signs, though, that snake wants to consume you. This is actually a pretty fun game. It's pretty boring if you don't know to pick up the money, which is the first, you know, my first run through. I was just like, what's this game about? If you pick up the money, then the snake starts to notice you and it starts to come after you, and it can get tense. It can get difficult and you'll take risks. You know, you'll think, oh, I could get to that money, that dollar sign, and get away from the snake in time. No, you can't. No, don't do that. Just wait. Wait it out. Okay. SN score is the companion sort of command to this. It shows you the high scores of the game or something like that. I got some non-fatal errors when launching Snake, saying that the scores couldn't be recorded due to permission errors. And as I've said, I'm not going to change my system permissions for these little games. So I didn't get to save my high score, whatever that would have been, and I didn't get to view it later. That's fine. Let's talk about Trek. Or let's try not to talk about Trek. This is a turn-based space war game. It's got a good interface. I found the user experience just fine. I mean, it's just a prompt, but you can always type question mark to see your valid input options, and it gives you a good list of everything you can do in the context of what stage of the game you're in. So, the goal, kill Klingons. That doesn't feel very much like Star Trek to me personally, but then again, Star Trek has always kind of had an identity crisis between exploration and military mass murder. I'm not going to get into that right now. I'm not going to get into the problems with sort of the premise of Star Trek and or its stated premise versus its implementation. Point is, in this game, you can move around space and you can get status reports and you can repeat that cycle, I guess, until ideally eventually you run into an enemy. But I mean, there's a lot of space out there, both in real life and apparently in this game. I played quite a while and I ran out of time before I encountered a Klingon. Like, I mean, in game, I ran out of time. They were just like, oh, you traveled too far and your time is up. Okay, well, great. I guess you should have told me where the Klingons were then, because I never found them. It's just a really long, drawn out game of, like, you know, Marco Polo or Battleship. You're just blindly wandering around, hoping that you don't go too slow, but also so fast that you run out of time. And I guess apparently there must be combat. I don't know. Not impressed. War games. Another one I'm not impressed with. I guess this is a joke. You launch it and you're asked, would you like to play a game? And then, you know, this is a reference to the Matthew Broderick movie War Games. That's what the computer famously asks him when he logs into the system. But no matter what you answer here, it just responds with, and I'm quoting, "A strange game. The only winning is not to play." And that's it. Like, I don't care what you, I've tried lots of different responses and I always get the same outcome. I think this is just like a one joke command, unless there's like an Easter egg that I'm not finding. Maybe I need to go watch the movie and see what I thought he just pressed Y and return. Or no, actually he didn't even have to press, because then it offers like what game he wants to play. I think I could be wrong. Anyway, I was not impressed. Did not enjoy. It's boring. I can imagine this was just a Hello World app, essentially. Like, I don't know why someone wrote and published this, unless I'm just missing something. I don't know. I would think that this should be maybe a literally like a 2-line shell script. It's just weird. Okay, Worm. This is the snake game. I mean, it's not the snake game, but when you say, oh, I want to play snake, this is what you're thinking of, Worm, actually. So you're a worm, you eat numbers. When you eat a number, you grow that many characters longer. And the more you eat, the longer you grow. If you run into anything, including a wall, much less your own tail, then you're dead. That's the game. So you're going to die. It's just a matter of sort of how long until you die. Like real life. Worms. This one draws what I guess are supposed to be worms on your screen. It goes, again, way too fast on modern hardware, so you use the dash D option to slow it down. I used dash D 200, and that seemed pretty reasonable to me. I like this one a lot more than I liked Rain. It's kind of generative art. It's not entirely unpleasant because, I mean, they don't really look like worms. They just are like squiggly shapes on your terminal. I don't know sort of why you would want this, but I guess if you just want some activity on the screen, you could launch this and just let it go. It would probably be interesting to look at the code sometime just to see what algorithm it uses to generate these sort of seemingly random, you know, starting points, and then how does it seed from there, and how does it determine how long a worm lives or dies, or a worm shape lives or dies. Yeah, it could be an interesting read sometime. Next one is WTF. Translates acronyms for you based on like its little database. So it's got two databases. One is user share MISC acronyms and user share miscacronyms.comp. One is just supposed to be, I guess, general acronyms, and the other is computer-related acronyms. So I'll try a couple here. WTF. Nope, not there. Okay, here we go. WTF. Got to type into a terminal for this. WTF space is, IS, space POSIX. Perl interface to IEEE standard 1003.1. No, that's not the POSIX. That's not the POSIX I was looking for, but okay. WTF is LOL. LOL, laughing out loud. Yep, that's better. There you go. That's WTF. Could be useful, maybe. It would be interesting to find out how to generate your own database for that, you know? I mean, like, hopefully it would be something simple, maybe processed with STR file, ideally, because I wouldn't want to have to learn, like, complex markup or something. But yeah, kind of interesting. And finally, we've got Wump. This was an interesting dungeon crawler. You're being hunted by a cave-dwelling creature called Wumpus. You're armed with a bow and 5 arrows, and you know, for whatever reason, that there are 20 rooms in this cave. So on your turn, you can move or shoot. So the cave does have some hazards beside the Wumpus. It's got like pits and bats. And the bats are tricky because they sound, you could mistake them for a Wumpus. And your goal is basically not to die, which I don't know if that's possible. I mean, eventually, presumably, you're going to run into the Wumpus. But I guess if you get lucky and you shoot it, then you're good to go. It's kind of, I guess, sort of a push your luck game, because there are a lot of bluffs happening. You don't get a lot of definitive, verifiable information from the game. It tells you things that you're hearing and that you're smelling, but you can, like I said, you can mistake a bat for a Wumpus pretty easily, and you only have the 5 arrows, so you can shoot, but if you shoot too much, then you're going to be out of ammo, and then what are you going to do? It was pretty fun, pretty quick, I think maybe because I was bad at it, but I mean, it was a fun game, and I found it a lot easier than what's the other one, Adventure, for me. I found it a lot less frustrating, maybe because, once again, like the sort of the set of constraints and the rules and the parameters of the engagement were, for me, a lot clearer than Adventure, where it's just like, here's this open world, do whatever you want. And then it's like, oh, you can't do that. Yeah, you can't do that either. I don't know what you're talking about. It's just frustrating. Anyway, Wumpus, or no, Wump, Wump. That was fun. Okay, and I think that's all of the BSD games. And I think that's probably the end of this episode, which means we have exactly one more package to go. And then we have gone through every single package in Slackware. That package is NetHack, which is a legendary dungeon crawler. If you've not heard of it, don't worry. We're going to talk about it next time on the very last episode of GNU World Order Podcast. See you then.